we are really concerned and really focused on the fact that these investments are going to reach every single corner of the country.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care.
In this episode, Business Forward and Small Business for America's Future hosted a briefing and Q&A on the American Jobs Plan with Administrator Isabella Guzman of the U.S. Small Business Administration, Bharat Ramamurthy, Deputy Director of the National Economic Council, Joelle Gamble, Special Assistant to the President for Economic Policy, and Zach Butterworth, Director of Private Sector Engagement for the White House. This briefing covered topics ranging from opportunities for small businesses and federal contracting to the ways in which the plan will help the U.S. stay globally competitive. This briefing is a part of a series of briefings Business Forward and our partner, Small Business for America's Future, will conduct with Biden officials on critical economic, climate, and healthcare issues. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
It's now my pleasure to turn the conversation over to an amazing woman, an amazing leader, Dr. Erica Gonzalez, who's not only a small business owner herself, she's also the chair of her local chamber of commerce, and she's the co-chair of Small Business for America's Future. And if that doesn't top it all off, she served our country and she has an MD, so she's earned that Dr. Gonzalez title. So with that, it's my pleasure to turn the floor over to you, Dr. Gonzalez.
Thank you so much, Rhett. It's really good to be here, both as a small business owner and a local business leader. It is a very challenging time navigating this landscape. So whenever we have opportunities like this to hear directly from our country's leadership, they're very, very critical and important to us. With that, I would like to go ahead and just dive right in. And it's my pleasure today to introduce a very special guest, Isabella Casillas Guzman, who serves as the 27th Administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration and was sworn in on March 17th of this year. Administrator Guzman represents more than 30 million U.S. small businesses and is committed to helping these small businesses grow and be resilient. She's been a lifelong proponent of businesses and grew up as a daughter of a small business owner, so at a very young age learned how important small businesses were to their communities, the people they employ, and the economies that they help empower. With that, Administrator, I'd like to turn it over to you. Thank you so much for being here.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Dr. Gonzalez, for that wonderful introduction. And thank you as well to Jim of Business Forward and Rep Buttle as well, and all of the Small Business Council members at Small Business for America's Future. I'm really pleased to be with you all today, and I really thank you for the continued collaboration, your insights, your advocacy on behalf of small businesses. I too am proud to serve as the voice of America's 30 million small businesses and innovative startups. And as you all know, America's small businesses are one of our nation's greatest job creators, creating 2/3 of net new jobs and employing nearly half of the private workforce. Small businesses, as we say, are the engine of our economy. And today, as we work to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic and build our economy back better than before, small businesses have a crucial role to play in creating the jobs of today and also the jobs of the future. But they can't do it alone. They need our help. And President Biden's $2 trillion American Jobs Plan offers a once-in-a-generation investment that will fuel our nation's small businesses and give them the tools as well as the opportunities that they need to grow and thrive. Right now, small businesses are held back by an aging transportation infrastructure that really keeps their supplies from getting to them and their products from getting to their customers. We've all heard about shipping delays brought on by the pandemic. But even before the pandemic, nearly 2/3 of America's small businesses rated the quality of local roads and bridges as average, poor, or very poor. We've asked our impacted small businesses to pivot and adapt during COVID, and oftentimes that's meant shifting to e-commerce for revenue generation and relying on those on the infrastructure that supports it. Yet one broken down bridge or one impassable road can mean the difference between success or failure. Infrastructure matters for small businesses on so many levels. Rebuilding infrastructure will provide countless opportunities for small construction companies, engineering, and other professional service firms, and more. And we know that those two industries in particular rank in the top five in terms of both the number of small firms and small business employment nationwide. The American Jobs Plan will invest in a sorely needed upgrade to our nation's roads, bridges, ports, airports, and transit systems. Broadband, too, is a necessity for small businesses everywhere, from big cities to rural communities. Technology matters for small businesses today more than ever, and building a universal broadband network will provide countless opportunities for fiber optic technicians, telecommunications engineers, and millions of telecommuting workers who depend on reliable internet connection to get their jobs done. The American Jobs Plan will build high-speed broadband infrastructure to reach 100% coverage while reducing the cost of broadband service. The U.S. Manufacturing was, at its time, the height during World War II, the arsenal of democracy. But supply chain disruptions during the pandemic have really shown us how far we've fallen. With today's heavy reliance on global supply chains and foreign producers, shipping of parts and materials being disrupted for nearly 75% of U.S. companies during the pandemic, we're seeing the impact. And bringing manufacturing back to our shores will not only ensure we have enough supplies of personal protective equipment and other critical medical supplies here at home, but it will also rebuild that ladder to middle-class life that manufacturing jobs can provide. Supply chains matter for small businesses, and the American Jobs Plan will strengthen manufacturing supply chains and innovation support networks while investing billions in financing and technical assistance programs for small manufacturers, the businesses that bring us the products we depend on, with a particular focus on small, minority-owned manufacturing businesses. Investing in transportation, infrastructure, technology, manufacturing, these are just three examples of how President Biden's plan will fuel long-term growth for America's small businesses and innovative startups. The American Jobs Plan also aims to give small businesses more opportunities to sell their products and services to Uncle Sam, the world's largest customer. It will create a national network of small business incubators and innovation hubs while empowering small firms to participate in federal R&D initiatives. And it will increase access to capital and equity for small businesses by injecting billions of dollars in funding into SBA's 7A loan program and Small Business Investment Company program. SBA programs I am committed to leveraging for increased equity. And together with the American Jobs Plan, the Made in America tax plan will help level the playing field between small businesses and large multinational corporations by ensuring that big corporations can't escape or eliminate the taxes they owe by offshoring jobs and profits from the United States and pay a lower tax rate than the small businesses. Under my leadership, SBA will strive to be as entrepreneurial as the small businesses we serve, and will focus on connecting all entrepreneurs with the resources they need to start, grow, and be resilient. The American Jobs Plan tools are there for all of today's small business owners and all of tomorrow's aspiring entrepreneurs. America already has the entrepreneurial spirit to build back better. All we need to do is give that spirit the support it needs to soar. And President Biden understands this. As he said, getting our economy back means bringing our small businesses back. We're already providing immediate relief with the American Rescue Plan. The American Jobs Plan takes the next step by putting our small businesses in the driver's seat of our nation's future, right where they belong. As the voice of small business, I want our entrepreneurs to feel like the giants they are in our economy. Thank you so much.
Administrator, thank you very much for your remarks and for going over that overview of the president's plan. We truly understand how busy you are and appreciate so much that you took the time to be with us today. And so now we're going to go and move on to our next guest, Bharat Ramamurthy. Bharat is the Deputy Director of the National Economic Council at the White House, and he's a graduate of Harvard College and Yale Law School, and was formerly the Managing Director of the Corporate Power Program at the Roosevelt Institute. He was an aide to Senator Elizabeth Warren for 7 years and served as her economic advisor during her 2020 campaign, presidential campaign. And in April of 2020, he was appointed member of the Congressional Oversight Commission for the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, so CARES, and has overseen all of the spending. Thank you so much. Welcome, Bharat. I'm going to go ahead and yield the floor to you.
Thanks so much. And thank you to the administrator as well for her remarks. I will be very short because I want to leave plenty of time for questions. Just to build on what the administrator said, the president and the vice president care deeply about small business. They have throughout their political careers, and it is a top priority of theirs in their administration to see small businesses not just survive and get through this crisis, but to come out the other side stronger and to grow. They believe that a robust small business sector is key to our economic recovery. It's key to getting people back to work. And it's really key to having an innovative, productive, inclusive economy going forward. Since the president and vice president have come into office, we have been very focused on implementing the small business programs that were passed over from the previous administration. We have made several changes to the way that the Paycheck Protection Program operates in order to make sure that the money is going to the smallest businesses, to businesses in the hardest hit areas, in rural areas. And we've been pleased by the changes that we've seen and the number of small businesses that we've been able to serve. We're also very glad that we were able to pass a 2-month extension of the Paycheck Protection Program with strong bipartisan support about a month ago. In addition, the president passed the American Rescue Plan roughly a month ago, and that plan included an additional $60 billion worth of aid to small businesses, including $28 billion specifically for restaurants and bars, who have been the hardest hit sector of the economy during the COVID crisis. We've also, under the administrator's leadership, made changes to the EIDL loan program, including deferring payments on those loans for an additional year, so that small business owners have more time to get back on their feet. The American Jobs Plan is the next step in the process. As the administrator said, the president from the beginning said, we must get through the crisis, we must deal with COVID and the economic crisis that we're in, but it's not good enough just to get back to where we were before. We need to build back better. And that includes making real changes, structural changes to strengthen small businesses, to create a more competitive marketplace, whether it's on the tax front, or otherwise, to let American small businesses grow and thrive. And with that, I will turn it back to Dr. Gonzalez.
Thank you very much, Bharat. I would like to introduce our last special guest, Mrs. Joelle Gamble. Before joining the economic policy team, Gamble worked as a principal at Omidyar Network, a social change venture. She's also gained experience as senior advisor to the president and CEO of the Roosevelt Institute, and as National Director of the Roosevelt Institute Network for Emerging Leaders in Public Policy. She's an economics professional, a graduate from UCLA and Princeton University, started her career as an organizer running campaigns for economic opportunity and higher education across in her home state of California. Joelle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Administrator. Thank you, Dr. Gonzalez, for that great introduction. And thanks, Bharat. It's always a pleasure to work with you. So I'm here to give you a little bit more detail into what's in the American Jobs Plan for small businesses. The president's plan makes over $110 billion in investments for small businesses and is really focused on the fact that small businesses are important engines for good jobs and for U.S. competitiveness. So there are a number of parts of this plan that I think will be of interest to this community, one of which is, you know, the fact that this plan is investing in, you know, the kind of community entrepreneurship infrastructure that we think is important for being able to support entrepreneurs all across the country in regions and states, including those that have been often left out, through funding a network of small business infrastructures, utilizing the great network that the Small Business Administration currently has. The American Jobs Plan makes a lot of investments in infrastructure all across the country, and we know that that's an opportunity for lots of small businesses across the country to be able to work with the federal government and get business that way. The American Jobs Plan also invests in small businesses that are doing research, that are coming up with, you know, frontier innovations that are important to our technological future and to our competitiveness by funding, SBIR, and supporting, you know, how you all are moving from idea to entrepreneurship to commercialization and scale. It's also important to note that the American Jobs Plan in particular is about increasing access to capital, both through government programs and through, you know, helping small businesses gain access to private capital as well. There's a lot of support here for lots of different types of capital access needs that small businesses in the United States have, from equity to cheaper credit through lending, and through recognizing the importance of federal contracting as cash flow for a lot of the work that you all are doing. And additionally, there's a heavy focus on racial equity and geographic equity, including support for the Manufacturing Extension Partnership that's working with our small and medium manufacturers to connect them to contracting opportunities, to connect them to other private market opportunities, and also the Manufacturing USA Institute, which the American Jobs Plan funds 10 more of, which will be an important opportunity for making sure that small businesses get support wherever you are located in creating opportunities that are related to our technological future. And so there's a lot in this plan that I think is important for small businesses. We're really looking forward to your questions here, because there are a lot of different ways in which we are trying to make sure that you all get the support that you need to grow, no matter what size you want to be. Small is also great. Not every business has to grow to become a large corporation. And also to make sure that these programs are reaching, you know, every small business that has needs in the United States. So making sure that we're investing in places that have been affected by deindustrialization or structural exclusion. And so that plan is really designed to tackle a number of different things at one time. And so we are just looking forward to hearing from you all what your questions are, how does this plan affect you, where can you find opportunities within this plan today. So thank you to the organizers for having us. Looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you very much. Joel, we're going to ask you to stay on, and we're going to invite Bharat to turn his camera on again so he can join us as we start our panel discussion. And we're also going to invite Mr. Zach Butterworth, who directs a private sector engagement in the Office of Public Engagement, to join the conversation. And we want to encourage all our participants today to go ahead and submit any questions they might have in the Zoom chat, and so that we can get some of those answered as well. So thank you all again for being here. We have a lot of business leaders who have joined us today, excited to hear more about the American Jobs Plan, to get their questions answered, but also because they have some concerns. So I would like to start with that topic first. As noted, business owners are very excited about more investment. However, some economists are saying that we may have too much investment and it may be too much for the economy. What would you say about that?
I'm happy to take that one. Thanks. So we in the administration monitor these types of issues very carefully. And from the president to the vice president to Treasury Secretary Yellen, the Council of Economic Advisors, there's a whole team in place to make sure that whatever investments we are proposing are intended to find the right balance between fiscal responsibility and addressing some longstanding problems that are holding back the economy. And if you look at the investment plan that we have proposed, you know, it sounds like a big number, I admit that, but we have to remember how big the US economy is. And so if you look at this investment program that the president has proposed, which is supposed to make investments over an 8-year period, what we're essentially proposing is that is investments of 1% of the economy each year for 8 years, which is significant and which will help us address a lot of problems, but does not sort of overpower the rest of the economy. I just keep coming back to the fact that for years, for decades, both Democrats and Republicans have talked about the problems that we are trying to address with this plan. The fact that our roads and bridges are in disrepair and that we are falling behind the rest of the world in our investments in basic infrastructure. That there's been a serious and longstanding problem with affordable housing across the country. That 400,000 childcare centers and K-12 schools are still getting water to this day through lead pipes, even though we know that lead is harmful to children. That 35% of households in rural communities don't have access to high-speed broadband internet. These are some basic problems that are holding back small businesses, holding back families, reducing the productive capacity of our economy. And it's going to take some investments by the federal government to fix them. And that's what the plan is about.
Thank you so much for that. Now, new investment, it sounds exciting, and many business owners can see how the benefits will flow to them in the long run. Can we talk a little bit about how some of these small businesses may see a benefit more immediately with this plan?
Yes, I'm happy to take that question. There are a few ways in which small businesses will see these effects immediately. One, when we're talking about infrastructure projects, we're talking about new economic activity, building things, opportunities for contracting. So that's one clear opportunity in the infrastructure spending. Two, you know, on the capital access side, we're talking about support for SBA's ongoing program. Recognizing that they were really critical lifelines for a lot of small businesses during the pandemic, but that there are still pre-existing inequities in capital markets that we think are important to solving and that the SBA is well positioned to be able to address. And so you'll see, you know, through this program, you know, continued increased access to capital that doesn't just stop when the COVID pandemic is finally over, but, you know, continues to address some of the issues that a lot of small businesses have faced before in accessing equity and accessing affordable credit options as well. The other piece that I'll note here is with the Manufacturing USA Institute, which we are proposing would run through the Department of Commerce. Those are regional opportunities for a lot of businesses in the regions in which they'll be placed. And that means that if that's coming to your community, that means you're going to have increased resources in terms of access to federal programs, grants, lending, funding for research as well. So we're also thinking a lot about those programs that I mentioned at the high level in some concentrated regions as well. Regions that we know are ripe for economic opportunity but have been perennially left out of investment within the US economy. Speaking to Bharat's earlier point that there are just some inequities in our economy that need to be fixed and that the American Jobs Plan makes an active effort to do so.
Thank you. That's really exciting to hear about all of that. I want to jump to a question that was actually submitted by one of our participants, Mr. John Dooley from Chesapeake, Virginia. And this has to do with financing. So we know that it's time for bold action right now, but is this just too expensive? How are we going to afford all of these great things that you guys are talking about proposing?
Sure. So alongside the investment plan that that we've talked about here, that makes investments in roads and bridges and broadband and our water system and manufacturing in the United States and so on. The president released his Made in America tax plan, which over a 15-year period would completely cover the cost of all of these investments. And just looking at the tax plan itself, as a standalone, it is good for the U.S. economy. It drives investment back into the U.S. There are actually a lot of provisions in the tax code right now that encourage big multinational corporations to shift jobs, to shift investment overseas. The plan addresses that. It also raises the corporate tax rate back up to 28%, which is the lowest it's been since World War II, other than the last 2 years. You know, in the last 2 years, we've seen US multinational corporations pay an effective tax rate of 8%. And that's, I'm guessing, a lot lower than a lot of the businesses represented on this call. It's a lot lower than a lot of middle-class families are paying. And as a result, we are generating less and less revenue from big corporations, which is shifting the burden to the rest of us. And I want to make something absolutely clear, since I'm sure this is on the minds of many folks here. If you are not filing taxes as a C corporation, this plan does not raise your taxes. This is a tax change for C corporations, for big multinational corporations in particular. And so we think that this is a fiscally responsible approach, one that makes productive changes to our tax system and that helps offset the cost of these investments over the next 15-year period. And so the president has been advocating for these changes. And I think, just to make one final point here, you know, I think a lot of small businesses who are trying to compete against larger businesses, the tax code is a problem, right? If you're trying to compete with a larger business that can shift their profits to Ireland and lower their tax rate, that makes it harder for you as a small business owner to compete, because I'm guessing you don't have a subsidiary in Ireland that you can book your profits in. So what we are trying to do is help level the playing field, ask these really large corporations to finally start paying their share, and allow small businesses to compete fairly by offering the best prices, the best service, and so on.
Yeah, thank you, Bharat. And you're correct. That is one of the biggest problems that small businesses struggle to have that level playing field. So it's good to hear that. We're going to jump to a question from Tamara Brown. She wants to know, this is dealing with manufacturing. How will the administration assure that U.S. manufacturers that American-made manufactured products will be used in the infrastructure projects that are outlined in the plan?
Thank you for this question. It is one that I think about every day because it's very important to this president that we are supporting, you know, the U.S. manufacturing base. I will say a few things. One, this jobs plan has funding for federal procurement. So when the federal government buys things, we're, as an administration, working to make sure that we're tightening Buy American and making it real so that when the federal government buys products from U.S. from manufacturers, it is doing everything it can to support production in the United States. Two, when we're thinking about these infrastructure projects, we're talking about another opportunity to make sure that the money is going to production that is happening in the United States with America's workers. And that is why in the jobs plan, we specifically call out the importance of Buy America and Ship American provisions. So setting domestic content requirements for these new investments to make sure that those contracts are going to folks who are doing work here in the United States. When we cannot, absolutely cannot find someone to do this work through products that were made in the United States, only then will we go elsewhere. And so that is a really important part of this plan. And it's an important part of how the president is thinking about using the role of public investment to encourage, you know, more production here in the United States in a way that will also support quality jobs for America's workers.
Thank you for that. And the next question is going to come from Tammy in Houston, and it deals with this infrastructure. And the administrator commented on some of this in her opening remarks. And so what Tammy's asking is, when the administration is talking about infrastructure, what exactly do they mean? Can you expand a little bit on that and give them a better idea of what kind of projects and infrastructure specifically it's referring to in the plan?
Sure, I'm happy to go take that, and then Joelle and Zach should obviously chime in. I think there are a number of key areas that we're talking about. There are investments in road repair, bridges, and so on. There are investments in our transit system, you know, how we get around. There are investments in broadband, internet, which, you know, I think has been shown over the last year in particular to be pretty critical to doing school, starting a business, working from home, and so on. As I mentioned, there are still far too many areas in the country that are getting water through lead pipes. The plan, it makes an investment in replacing every single lead pipe in the country, improving our water system, which is another key infrastructure aspect. Our power grid, you know, we saw in Texas how vulnerabilities for our power grid in bad weather can cost not just economic activity, but it can cost lives. The Department of Energy estimates that it costs $70 billion a year because of vulnerabilities in our power grid, because of power outages, and so on. So the plan makes a $100 billion investment in strengthening the resiliency of our power grid so we avoid those kinds of tragedies going forward. There are investments in worker training, which we feel are critical to supporting those infrastructure investments, because you need workers who have these skills necessary to, you know, lay broadband fiber or to participate in affordable housing construction or to work on the power grid or to replace those lead pipes. So the definition of infrastructure in our view has always changed over time. There's a time when railroads weren't infrastructure, and there's a time when the internet wasn't considered infrastructure. And it's key to the president that we look ahead 30, 40, 50 years and think about what are the investments that we need to make now in order to be in a position for our economy and for our families to be succeeding 30 or 40 years from now. And I just make one last point, which is that as a percentage of their economy, you know, China is absolutely blowing us out of the water when it comes to investments in infrastructure. You know, they're not sitting on their hands. And I think from the president's perspective, in order to remain the world's leading economy, in order to remain the best place to start a business in the world, we need to make these investments too.
Thank you, Bharat. Does anybody else on the panel want to add to that?
Yeah, Bharat, I would also add that investments in the caregiving economy are also infrastructure. You know, I'm sure a lot of the small business owners on the call have had employees that need to leave work early or have to take time off because they're caring for an elderly parent or a child. And, you know, these investments will not only mean that we're compassionate for those people at those times in their life, but it means that small businesses aren't seeing the hiccups associated with people going on and off work.
Absolutely. Thank you for adding that. You know, and you brought up China as an example of somebody who's really beating the U.S. as far as infrastructure is concerned. So we have a question from Jane in Dayton, Ohio, and she wants to know, as a small business owner, she's grown increasingly worried about the competition over in China. What does the American Jobs Plan to do to help us be more competitive? Are there any specific things that we could share?
Sure. And again, I would invite Joelle and Zach to add on. I think that there are significant investments in manufacturing and in our supply chain so that we produce more things here and are less reliant on other countries. And that's something that I know Joelle can go into more detail on. You know, I think for folks who have traveled abroad, whether it's to China or other parts of Asia or to Europe, I think you can see with your own eyes that in many places, you know, the airports are in better shape, the ports are in better shape, the public transportation system is in better shape, the roads are in better shape. And all of those things, you know, hold the U.S. back internationally. We still have so many advantages, right? We have an incredibly innovative set of folks here. We have some of the best schools in the world. We have a great public education system, research universities, a strong legal system. All of those things give us a tremendous competitive advantage, and we intend to keep that. But unless we make these investments in our infrastructure and make it easier to send your goods from one place to another, to make it easier to get employees who can stay at your small business, you know, there's so many issues related to transit, to affordable housing opportunities that make it harder to retain employees, especially if maybe you live in if you're operating in a rural area, and so on. These are key investments that are going to make the entire U.S. population more productive. And I would say, just to build on what Joelle said as well, we are really concerned and really focused on the fact that these investments are going to reach every single corner of the country. It's not just about investing in the Northeast or in Silicon Valley or in, you know, some of these places across the country that have a really strong research base already. It's about building those in every state, in every corner of the country, so that no matter where you live, you have a chance to start a business, to grow a business, to connect to the global economy, to get the high quality workforce, and so on. And that's how we're going to retain our competitive edge.
Joelle, Zach, anything either one of you would like to add?
I'd like to add a few things. When I think about U.S. competitiveness, I think about a number of parts that are represented in this job plan. One, how are we making sure that we are setting up the American economy and America's workers to come up with some of the most innovative ideas that will become innovative products in the long run? And that is one part of this plan. Currently, while US R&D has been steady over the last 30 years, our public R&D has been on decline compared to other countries, which has meant that some of those bigger ideas that come from public investment aren't necessarily happening here in the way they should. But it's not just about R&D, it's also about how does that idea turn into a product that someone can scale? If it's a good product, how do they find a market for it? You know, how do they build a viable business? And there are investments in the American Jobs Plan to help essentially with that issue too, commercialization and scaling up. And then on top of that, you know, making sure that America's workers who want to be able to be a part of these competitive industries have an opportunity to. So there are also investments in our workforce, both in apprenticeship, because we know that college is important, but that's not the pathway for everyone. And also in sector-specific programs, we're trying to be smart about how we're connecting trained workers to industries who have a need. Overall, the economy doesn't have a skills gap problem, but an industry needs to be able to find a worker who is, you know, interested in entering their field very easily and to do so on a regional basis. So we're also thinking very strategically about, like, how are we doing workforce development, connecting people, you know, who do not have opportunities right now to companies who have opportunities right now.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm going to shift subjects a little bit. We're going to focus on small business opportunities. This is a question coming from Anthony in Nashville, Tennessee. So what features, if any, does the American Jobs Plan address for startup businesses? So startup businesses obviously have their own unique challenges. And so what are some of the things that we can expect from this plan? Anybody want to take that one?
Startups have their own unique challenges. I mentioned before that there are different trajectories for a business. Some businesses, their goal is not to grow and scale. Some businesses, you know, they're setting themselves up to be high growth, and there are difficulties there as well. I think there are a few parts of the plan that are important for startup ecosystem. I keep mentioning, you know, moving from R&D to commercialization to scale. What does that mean in terms of investments? We're investing in SBIR for that reason. We're thinking a lot about some of these, the community infrastructure that I mentioned for entrepreneurship. So using the existing network the SBA has to fund local incubators and accelerators as well to help startups. And then I think, you know, broadly speaking, these manufacturing USA institutes that we have now that are focused on specific technologies are not just meant to focus on that technology. They're supposed to focus on the ecosystem in the region in which they exist, which means that there are spillover effects that we are aiming for, which means that in order to actually build a strong regional ecosystem, we have to invest in lots of different kinds of businesses because there are lots of different complementary technologies involved, which means that we need to make sure that there's important startup capital there as well. The last thing I will mention is there's also support for small business equity as well through the SBIC.
So our next questions actually have to do with small businesses and how they can compete with larger businesses. And there is a question coming from Anthony Martinez in Tucson, Arizona. And specifically, he wants to know, these big businesses or the large corporations are crowding the space in terms of opportunity for small businesses, especially in Indian country. So too many of the funds appear to come with strings attached, that is designated companies. So how can we make sure that the small companies get the same opportunity and priority to get trained if necessary or their contracts to do the work?
I'll happily take this question. Sounds like there's two parts here. One is overall programmatically, you know, are there strings attached that make it harder for smaller companies, especially those in Native nations and tribal nations, to be able to access programs? And then there's also, it seems like a question here around contracting specifically. So speaking to the first point, and colleagues, please jump in. I think that that's important when we're talking about, first of all, the work we're doing with Congress and then an implementation of a lot of these programs, that we make sure that we're not inadvertently tilting the scale towards companies who will not be as easily affected by a compliance burden in terms of accessing these programs. So I think that point is well taken and something that we're very mindful of. In terms of contracting specifically, you know, the president made a number of campaign commitments around making sure that small businesses, especially businesses that are ran by historically underrepresented communities, veterans, women, Black and Brown entrepreneurs, have access to contracting opportunities. And so it's something that we take very seriously, both through pushing our own agency partners to be able to go above and beyond what is required of them by Congress. And then also as we work with Congress to make sure that we're setting, you know, higher standards for contracting when it comes to both the federal government does and to what states and localities do.
Perfect. The next question coming from Clara in New Mexico has to do with paid leave. So many small businesses are trying to better understand how paid family leave will affect their businesses given the ongoing debate. Under some of the recent legislation, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act was passed. What is the administration's plan to better understand this and help small businesses who want to do the right thing?
Yeah, so there's a current tax credit that's available that is actually still, they can take it retroactively for last year for employees that were out related to illness, and that pays a portion of that person's salary up to a certain cap, and we can get the team here some more details on that. And then I'll turn it over to Joella Barat for sort of our forward-looking policy on paid leave.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would just add is, as Zach noted, there is, you know, over the course of this year, this tax credit that will help offset the cost to businesses of employees taking paid leave. You know, that provision runs through the end of the year. At the moment, it is not something that's going to extend beyond the end of this year, but it is retroactive, as Zach pointed out, which means that if there were employees that you had last year that took paid leave and you did not claim the credit, you still may have an opportunity to claim the credit and get a portion or potentially all of their payroll costs covered through that provision. You know, more broadly, the United States is one of very few countries internationally that doesn't have paid leave. And as we've seen, there are not only effects on people's families because they can't take paid time off to deal with family issues, but it also means that there are public health issues, right? Part of the reason we want people to take paid leave is that if they're feeling sick, they should feel comfortable staying home and shouldn't have to feel like they're going to lose their job or lose an important day's worth of pay to stay home and potentially avoid passing along an illness to other employees. That was the reason why paid leave was such a critical part of our response to COVID. And even in a world, you know, beyond COVID, that rationale is still going to be there, where we want people to take time off to go to a doctor, or at least to stay home and rest if they're not feeling well. You know, the president has not put forward a plan yet for what to do with paid leave going forward. It's certainly something that could be on the agenda. So once we have more details on that, we will make sure to share them.
Yeah, I would also mention on the paid leave tax credit that was passed, I guess, beginning in April. That's also, that tax credit can be used for employees that are getting the vaccine and either for their time off to go get the vaccine, but also if they have any symptoms and need to go home early on a day. So another reason to encourage your employees to get vaccinated, because it's a reimbursable time for you.
That's great information to know. Thank you. I'm going to shift to training. And we know that one of the big components of this plan is training and workforce development. And so many Americans need to skill up in order to be ready for expanded job opportunities. Yet updating some of these old skills and the addition of new ones require education. And as we all know, that doesn't come without cost. What provisions are being made to help citizens affordably obtain these new skills, especially for those who have already been burdened with student debt?
Happy to jump in here. One thing that I would note is that soon there will be an American Family Plan, which I think is also going to have a number of provisions related to education. So just wanted to note that the American Jobs Plan is part of like a broader vision for recovery, inclusivity, and restoring the social contract between government and the American people. But on the workforce development piece, I think I mentioned a few notes here. There's the apprenticeship training, there's the apprenticeship funding, there is funding for sector-specific programs. There's also, not necessarily in the workforce development plan, but there's also money to support community colleges, as well as, frankly, R&D and research at universities, which I think is an important part of that pipeline as well. Making sure it's not just going to the most well-resourced universities, but that we're actually promoting equity within the R&D system through the way we're funding public R&D. So there are a number of provisions here that are about access to training, making sure it's accessible for folks who may not be able to afford to get trained on their own or do not work in a place that offers training for them. I would also mention that the bill supports the PRO Act. I just want to mention that unions are also an important part of this training infrastructure. I'd be remiss if I did not just like add that in terms of, especially as we're thinking about transitioning from one sector to the other.
Great, thank you, Joelle. You talk about equity, and obviously this is something that is important in all the different parts of this American Jobs Plan. So there's a question coming out of New York. Are they going to provide equal access for minority vendors to participate in the allocation of contracts? And I think we've talked a little bit about it already, but if we can expand a little bit on that, on how that's going to look.
Sure. So as I'm sure many of you all are aware, that the 8A program is a really important opportunity for Black and Brown entrepreneurs, veteran entrepreneurs, folks from perennially underinvested in economic communities, as well as women-owned businesses to gain access to both the technical assistance that they need to access contracts and contracts themselves, especially through sole source. So that is a program that we are, of course, and I don't want to speak for my SBA colleagues, but we are very invested in making sure that that program is supported as the White House. And I think that it's important for ensuring that there's equity in implementation of these programs, especially when we're coming to issues that the federal government is actually buying, products the federal government is actually buying itself. I think in terms of the investments in infrastructure, this is where an earlier comment around provisions that we can't fight for in the bill that are making sure that there is equity in the allocation of resources and equity in the contracting. I mentioned the Made in America provisions. I think it's important to also consider, you know, how these contracts are being allocated to underserved contractors also. So I think that's, there's kind of two main mechanisms by which that'll happen, both through what the federal government buys directly and then through what's being funded to states and localities. And I think we're committed to working with our partners in states and localities to make sure that they have all the resources that they need to make sure that they're distributing funding equitably.
Perfect, thank you. The next couple of questions have to actually do with this rollout and the logistics. A question from Karen Wilcox in Washington, DC. Will it coordinate the economic development via the SBA, rural development, commerce, and other programs? And is education included in this rollout? And I guess looking how this is going to interplay with the departments and how that the role they'll play in the rollout.
This is a whole government effort, right? We are talking about, you know, $2 trillion over 8 years. That is really about, you know, building a more equitable and competitive economy, which means that like every agency is essentially implicated in some way, shape, or form in the president's vision, because every agency has an expertise that is super important for the future of the economy. You know, one thing I didn't mention here in the American Jobs Plan, but their support for, you know, a lot of support for our rural communities, whether it's through funding for economic development, funding for rural manufacturers in particular. There are just lots of different parts of the plan that we didn't have a chance to mention here, but they draw on the expertise of every single one of our agency partners.
Thank you very much. So we're going to make this the last question. I think this one's going to be a little bit more straightforward. So why this plan and why now? What is the president's plan to get this through Congress with such tight margins? And we'll let everybody kind of chime in. We want to start with Bharat, maybe?
Sure. So as I said earlier, I think the president views this as trying to address some longstanding problems that both Democrats and Republicans have identified over the years. And he thinks that we can't afford inaction. So what his preference would be is to work with Democrats and Republicans in Congress to build a bipartisan coalition to pass as much of these elements as possible. Just yesterday, he met in the Oval Office with a group of both Democrats and Republicans who are committee chairs in Congress with jurisdiction over different parts of the bill, whether it's broadband or replacing water pipes or affordable housing and so on. And they had a really good discussion. And at the end of the meeting, his message was basically, if you don't think that these are problems, let me know. If you think that these are problems and you have a different way of solving them, let me know. If you think that these are problems worth solving and you have a different way for paying for some of this, let me know. But we got to have this discussion and we got to do it quickly because, as I said, other countries aren't holding back. And each day that we wait, there's real harm to our competitiveness, to families, and to our economy. And so, our hope is that we will make progress on as much of these priorities as possible over the next several months. And whether that takes the form of, you know, one big bipartisan bill or takes the form of a bipartisan bill and some other additional bills that move through some other process, we'll just have to see. I think it's a little early to say. This is the beginning of the discussion. And our hope is that everyone in Congress, you know, brings forward their ideas and we have a really good, healthy debate about how to achieve these goals.
Perfect. Thank you. So now's the time, right? I want to thank all three of you for being here and taking the time. This was incredibly informative, and we appreciate learning so much of it. But before we wrap up, I do want to hand the floor to Zach Butterworth, the Director of Private Sector Engagement at the White House, to make some comments before we hear final remarks from Jana Platt.
Thank you, Dr. Gonzalez, and thank you to everyone that joined us today. As you can see, the American Jobs Plan contains the most historic investments in America since we built the interstate highway system. You and your businesses are absolutely the backbone of this country. So just like when you make investments in your business, you target capital in order to spur growth. And so that's what our plan does. We plan to invest about 1% of GDP over an 8-year period, and we would pay that back over about a 15-year period. We think that this is going to revitalize manufacturing, enhance basic research and sciences, help you get your products to market, help you get your employees safe, healthy, and to work, And we look forward to working with you as we bring this legislation to the floor over the summer. So thank you to all of our 30 partners that helped us organize this today. And we hope that this is one of the first of many discussions to come. So thank you.
Thanks, Zach. And on that note, hi, everyone. My name is Jana Platt. I'm Executive Director of Business Forward. If you would like to be involved, we would love to hear from you. If you'd like to share your story on the American Jobs Plan, also the American Rescue Plan, please reach out to Small Business for America's Future and Business Forward. We truly want to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to Bharat, Joelle, Zach, Administrator Guzman, and our lovely moderator, Dr. Gonzalez. Like Zach said, thank you so much to our partners. We hope that you'll enjoy us for our next briefing. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Littman and Alex Pastanen. Special thanks to Jana Platt. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Thank you.